On today's show, we get personal and political with our very first guest from Penhold, none other than the mayor himself. This is Penhold Talk Radio. And welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us again this week. My name is Brian Constantine. I am here with my co-host, Michael Rowland.
Hello, hello.
All right. And finally, you don't have to hear from just us this time. For the first time, we do have another Penholder with us, the one and only Mike, Mayor Mike Yarjot. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This is coming on our little show. This is the big get in Penhold.
Oh, like this really yeah. is. There's a lineup of cheap people trying to book me.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. So before we get into the controversies and all that kind of stuff, of course we'll get to all that, right?
Yeah.
We want to make this as uncomfortable for you as possible. Really the idea to bring you on is just kind of get to know you and introduce you to Penhold. And though by looking at your bio, you've been here for a while.
I've been here my whole life, essentially. I lived in Red Deer for a year when I was going to trade school. And then moved back in with my parents before I bought a house in town, and I've been here ever since.
So your folks lived here when you were born.
Yeah, my parents moved here in the late 70s into Penhold Estates.
Okay.
And then we lived in a house in Dundee Crescent.
There you go.
And then we lived on a house on Lee Street, which is where I live now, coincidentally. And then we moved out to one of the small acreages just on the other side of the train tracks. And that's kind of where I grew up from about 5 years old on.
Nice. We talked a number of episodes ago about the couple that had their 70th anniversary, wedding anniversary.
Oh, Elmo and Elma Johnson.
Yes.
So they babysat me when I grew up. I've grown up with their family. I've vacationed with their family. I've known the Johnsons. They've known me since before I was born.
Wow.
Yeah.
Back then it was like a population of like 500 in Penhold. And so I wanted to, mid 80s. So I looked at the census, the earliest, I think around the time you were born was 87 that I came across, and it was 1495.
Yeah. My childhood memories of Penhold are 1500 people is what I kind of always base it on.
Yeah. And so like, even when I moved here, 13 plus years ago, I don't know the population, but it feels like everything north of Hayter, I think it is. Isn't it? Not Hayter. Yeah.
Lee Street.
Lucina. North of Lucina. Everything north of Lucina is like brand new, even just in that short time frame.
Oh, I used to have tree forts over there.
Yeah. I think the population here, from everything I know, it sat pretty almost stagnant for a lot of years and then just suddenly exploded.
Yeah. It was 1500 people forever. And then Laybon development started moving in. So that was first, which would be the opposite side of the Centex or whatever it is. Chevron. Those closes were first. That was all Farmers Field when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy how much has changed just in the time I've been here, but then alone, 40 plus and then 70 plus years. It's just remarkable.
Yeah.
Because now Penhold has annexed a huge chunk of land from the county.
Yes.
How much bigger do you think Penhold can get? Or is it, it's a nice small town. I just kind of, just as an idea, how much can a small town grow and still be a small town kind of idea?
Yeah. That's something we think about a lot when we try to plan our growth is, a lot of the allure of Penhold is a small town kind of close to a big city. So people want to be here because they don't want to be in the city, and you got to kind of balance that growth. So, as it stands, with the land we have, we could grow to, right around 8,000 people. And
that's
past 50 years from now.
It's growing. We got Tim Hortons now in here, and it starts to feel more grown up.
Dairy Queen. I'm watching that building. It's taking its jolly time, but I'm watching that building.
Yeah. The other thing that I remember was when IGA switched to their new place, or I guess Family Foods. Yeah. When it was I remember walking into it when, where it used to be at the, where the dance studio is now, and walking in there, and it was like a time capsule.
Yeah.
That place. Like I always, I regret it now. I really wanted to go back and just take a take pictures in there. Yeah. Cause you could take a picture and pass it off as a 1950s kind of view. And it just had a wonderful nostalgic look to it. I'm sure they're happy to get to the new place, but
I think it was Rich that put some old pictures on Facebook fairly recently, and I was going through time remembering those old aisles and the little movie section they had.
That's that development of that little strip mall is, I think, really kind of felt like it's matured Penhold quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a few things that sort of really pushed the town. So the multiplex would have been the first one. That whole development there with the grocery store and the doctor's office and the pharmacy, that was another phase of growth. So once we got that, a full-size grocery store, a pharmacy, a walk-in clinic, I mean, that pushed more people to move here.
Yeah.
And then the high school was another phase when kids parents realized their kids could go to school here from K to 12 was a big difference.
Quite a bit of change has happened. Now, with you, as I'm doing my research, Michael calls it Facebook stalking. I called it research.
Yeah, one and the same.
Yeah, right. One kind of fascination I have is with how many different jobs there are out there just in the world. Think about all the different things people do, and how most of the work that people do probably are not what they wrote down in grade one, what they were planning on doing.
Yeah,
not at all.
To me, it's kind of interesting what path took you to that. And for you, is now you work with, and like I said, my research led me to say you're a part of Alarm Tech Inspection Services.
Yeah, so we've changed our name. We're now Advanced Fire Alarm Systems.
Advanced Fire Alarm Systems.
Same line of work.
Yeah. So what does that do?
So I test and inspect commercial fire alarm systems, and I repair them, and I install them, and program them. So I'm an electrician by trade. Got into the fire alarm side of it actually with my dad, who had been doing it for a number of years before me. And just kind of that's where I am now.
Business.
I really enjoy the work. It's I'm inside all the time. It's it's relatively safe as far as recessions or anything goes. I mean, a lot of the inspections are insurance requirements, or they're required by law. So
so you kind of got people don't have a choice. Job security.
And then, you know, owning the company and kind of allows me to set my schedule and frees me up to do my favorite job, which is being the mayor of Penhold, but that doesn't pay the bills. So,
And you haven't changed your wage yet with the town yet to go full time.
No, it is not a full time job. I don't see it being a full time job for a while in a town of this size.
Yeah. So got into it with your dad.
Yeah.
Now I think most people probably are familiar with your mom. She's the one who's out and about.
Yeah.
Not as familiar with your dad.
So, dad actually, he was a Penhold town counselor for years when I was young too, but, he grew up in Penhold, or didn't grow up in Penhold, has lived in Penhold since the 70s. He lives just out in Pine Lake now.
Yeah.
But he's still in Penhold and a part of the community. So a lot of the old timers in Penhold know my dad too. He's not as involved in the town anymore, but, even with the Penhold baseball league that we have now, the slow pitch league, he helped start that up both times because they used to have one years and years ago. And then when we started up this new one, dad helped out with that too. So
cool. And then obviously your mom is much more involved in kind of the political side and public service side of things.
Yes.
Would you say you take more after your mom or your dad? And it's kind of interesting because you work in the job following your dad and yet you are very much in the public eye like your mom is.
So growing up, they were both kind of in the public eye, right? My dad was on town council. Yeah. My mom was the chairperson of the school board. So they were both very actively involved in the local PC party constituency association. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think I took after both of them. I'm I'm definitely more like my mother now. We're still involved in politics. Dad isn't as much anymore.
Yeah.
And just the style of politics would more be like my mom, I guess. But
so do you can being in the public eye, would you classify yourself as an extrovert or an introvert?
You know what? I think about this a lot because I really try to.
I'm sure everyone's kind of a blend of it and kind of flows one way or the other.
I really enjoy my time at home, like with the blinds closed, sitting in my sweatpants and not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
But when I leave the house, I'm a total extrovert. I like being out. I like meeting people. But I think I need that time where I can just lay on the couch like a slob and watch, you know, YouTube or watch sports. So probably a bit of both. But when I'm out in public, I'm an extrovert. I like being out there.
Yeah. In the right amount of doses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the nice recharge of being alone. Yeah. Totally get that.
So sports is one thing I just want to bring up because you're a big baseball fan, it seems like.
Big baseball fan. Big baseball,
you have Blue Jays, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Blue Jays.
Do you have another?
I'm a Blue Jays fan. I'm a baseball fan in general. I was a Red Sox fan when I was growing up because my dad went to Boston for work and brought me back a Red Sox hat. So then when I was a kid, I was just a Red Sox fan because I had a hat.
Yeah.
But then when I started getting more into baseball, I'm a Jays fan now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it was pretty young when the Blue Jays won the World Series. Like I feel like I remember it, but I feel like I more remember like Joe Carter's big home run because of reruns more than anything else.
Yeah. I remember the home run, but probably reruns. And back then I was a hockey fan. I'm still a hockey fan, but
That's the other thing. Cause you hide that a little bit more than like say Walsh.
Well, that's cause I'm an Oilers fan.
That could get you in a lot of trouble. So
between the Oilers and even the lockout in 2006, that's when I started watching less hockey. And then cheering for the Oilers, they've sucked for so long that they've beat the hockey fan right out of me. I don't enjoy watching them. I've tried to get back into it this year. I just don't watch it as much, but I'm a bit of a hockey fan, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's a tricky spot for the Oiler fan. It seems like there's a lot of potential there and every now and then they flash it.
Say that every year.
I know. I see. I'm a Leafs fan, so I can kind of commiserate a little bit. Yeah.
My best friend is a Leafs fan, so that's usually the one game I go to a year is the Leafs Oilers game.
And yeah, no, I get that more from my grandma who came from Ontario.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was Saturday night. You watched the Toronto game and you cheered against Montreal. That was what you did. on Saturday nights. So an Oilers fan. Good week. So we're getting the deep takes here. The other thing I'm curious about is where the Town Crier character came from.
That would have been an idea from one of the staff members. No, actually, I think it was Myra Binnendijk, the librarian.
I can believe that.
I'm pretty sure it started with Myra's idea. So I was a counselor at the time and Myra approached me and just asked if I would be willing to do this. And I thought, it was a really cool idea. It's a lot of fun. You know, I thought,
was this before you knew there's a costume involved?
No, the costume, I was a big fan of the costume. Oh, okay. I love that. So I just decided, let's go with it. It was kind of a big hit the first year and then I've done it ever since.
So how long has that been going on then?
So about 8 years, probably 7 or 8 years.
It's been here 13. It feels like I've known you as the Town Crier for a while now.
Yeah. I think I did it for almost all 4 years when I was a counselor, 3 years for sure. So at least 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way you can claim to be a bona fide introvert and be the Town Crier.
Right.
Character.
Yeah.
No,
that's yeah. when I, that's, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's the extrovert really yeah, comes right. out yeah. there. Yeah.
All right, so kind of shifting back to politics a little bit. I don't think I have the clip queued up. I'll queue it up in post. But I know you know the clip.
Okay.
It's you were at some sort of, I think council was at a provincial meeting and you were giving a question to the energy minister at the time. And this looks like it's been being filmed on through someone's phone as it's being projected onto a video screen.
Yeah.
And you're up there asking the question, but you started off by mentioning that you're from Penhold, the crown jewel of Alberta.
Yeah.
Penhold, also known as Alberta's crown jewel. My question is for the audience. Penhold, also known as Alberta's crown jewel. My question is for the audience.
Okay, that has to be a put-up job, no?
No, that I would give credit to that to Sean McIntyre, the former mayor of Sylvan Lake. So he always used to, whenever he would go up or whenever he would speak somewhere, he would introduce himself as, "Hi, I'm Sean McIntyre, the happy mayor of the beautiful town of Sylvan Lake." So I was going up to ask this question and I thought, okay, I got to say something. I got to be something, right? So I landed on Penhold, Alberta. Penhold, the crown jewel of Alberta.
So you take complete ownership of that one.
Yeah.
Because the next question is like, how did you keep a straight face then? Because on the video, it sounds like it's maybe Rick's voice. It sounds like there's a slight chuckle when that comes up. Like,
oh yeah.
Like they knew that was coming.
Yeah. Well, I think I did tell people at the table that that's what I was going to say. So they were ready for it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just kind of stuck now. And anytime I have the chance to introduce myself or to speak to a big, crowd, in November I was in Ottawa and introduced myself as the mayor.
I haven't seen a video of that yet. So
I don't know if there is a video of that one, but I did do it.
Nice. all right. So when it comes to politics, you were first elected councillor in 2013.
Yeah.
And then been mayor since 2017.
Yes.
What motivated you to get into elected office in the first place? Because it's not really the friendliest territory to get into.
Yeah. So 2013 would have been right around the time when we had a bit of a controversy in town. If you remember the sign guy there, and there was. There was just a lot of stuff happening in town. Some people were upset, thinking about the town's debt position or the multiplex or taxes. And I had always kind of wanted to be involved. I used to work on the road a lot. I was in a spot in my life now where I was home every night. And I just saw all this happening and wanted to be sort of a positive voice in the community and talk about all the good things we're doing. And at the same time, I also owned a house and I thought, yeah, our taxes are a little bit high here, so we do need to do something. I definitely came in with an attitude like, you know, I can come in and change this overnight. Like we can fix everything now. And then you learn once you get elected. Cause I wouldn't say I knew enough, but I got elected and I learned a lot and I'm still learning a lot. So I guess I just decided I had the time and I was ready to do it. So I put my name in. I think we had 11 people running for council in that election.
It's a pretty high number.
Yeah. And I just started hitting doors, basically. I ordered some stuff off Vistaprint and away I went.
And then 2017, is it kind of the same motivation then to kind of go for the big chair?
Yeah, I was. I thought it was time that... That someone, so, you know, if you look at the demographics of Penhold, we're one of the youngest communities in Alberta. Yeah. I mean, our average age at that point it was about 32. I think we're still right around there. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look around our community, I wanted people like our community kind of representing us. We had a really good group on council at the time. I had a lot of support from them. They were kind of pushing me to run, and it was something that, again, I talked to my wife, we were ready to do. It was a timing thing. So I went for it, I guess. Took the chance and here I am.
So in 2017, you actually won an election again.
Yes.
And then 2021, you were acclaimed. How was that experience different? Do you perceive it to feel different?
Yeah, it definitely felt different. So my election victory, I guess, would have been nomination day.
Yeah.
So the awkward part leading up to it is, like, when I was challenging the incumbent, I knew there was going to be an election because I was going to be the one making it happen. So, you know, I was prepared. I had signs ordered. I had brochures made up. I had a plan, right? And now when I'm in this spot and no one is really running against me, no one had said anything to that point, So in the months leading up to it, I'm going, okay, should I be ordering some new stuff or how much money should I be spending? Because you've got to file reports for anything you spend, and plus you got to spend money, right?
Yeah.
So it was a lot of stress leading up to it, because I thought, you know, at the last minute, somebody could go in there and put their name in, and I'm kind of caught flat footed here, but I wasn't hearing anything in the community. I kind of thought nobody was going to run. So noon on September 20th was my... I was driving out to Three Hills, and I had got a call that said, okay, the nominations have closed. Nobody put their papers in. And I hung up the phone and went, yes. And I phoned a friend and a colleague of mine that from a different community that had been in a similar spot 4 years before. And I said, you know, what did you do? And mm-hmm. he sort of told me what his process and my other, I was at that point, I sort of switched to, okay, now there is an election still for councillors, and I wanted to make sure I was not going to be involved or not do anything wrong to sway that election. Yeah. I didn't want to be out campaigning for people or anything. I thought that's not my job now. So that was the other questions I had asked some friends of mine in the province. I had one bottle of cherry a barrel aged cherry Belgian beer.
Was this like saved up?
Yeah. So it was either I bought it. It's from Red Heart Brewing, which is my favorite brewery, just outside of Red Deer. So I bought two bottles of this beer that he had made. One still sitting in my cellar. I was going to wait for it to age for a year.
Like one if you win, two if you lose. No.
So when I bought it, I told Kurt there. I said, you know, I'm buying this. I'm either going to drink it and cry, or I'm going to drink it and celebrate. So anyway, I brought it that night. Poured a glass for me and my wife, and that was our celebration.
So I guess how do you approach mayor being acclaimed versus being simply elected? Like how do you feel? I guess it's more of kind of a federal and provincial things where, you know, you have this mandate kind of thing going on.
I mean, I sort of look at it, you know, I think I've done a pretty good job. I'm pretty open to listening to people. I don't shy away from anything. So I'd like to think that there's a reason why I got acclaimed, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I've approached it is, you know, if someone didn't want me here, they would have ran against me. So, and also sure, when you're the mayor, I mean, I'm just one person, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's our whole team that we have. And I just kind of always keep that attitude and remember that, you know, I'm here to be a part of that team. I'm not here to be my own team. And, yeah. Work with everybody.
Yeah, you don't have enough people to be like have backbenchers and then kick people out of caucus or anything like that.
You would be surprised some of the drama that you get in small town council, not even small town councils, and councils throughout the country. Penhold is really fortunate that we don't have that. We did prior to 2013. There was a lot of issues with that with the councils or the council before that, but we've been really lucky since then that we've. Everyone that's got elected has sort of had the right attitude and been here to work for the community. So
yeah. Have you watched the show Parks and Rec?
Yeah, I've watched it all. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what came to mind. It's like, okay, now we got to start a show about small town council or something like that, right? Yeah. Do you get anywhere direction you want to go with
it? Not to make it too weird for you, but was it strange? Becoming mayor without anybody running against you, does it give you a weird feeling or not being able to gauge community support?
Yeah, the campaign season was different. I've relied since then a lot on council because I wasn't out there door knocking like they were. Yeah. And I didn't hear some of the things. I didn't talk to people that I normally would have in that time of season or election season. So it is a little weird. You don't and with everything going on where we're not having public events, you know, you sort of miss some of that connection with the community. Like I do know a lot of people in town. I talk to a lot of people, but you definitely miss out on that. The campaign was, I mean, campaigns are the best time to get feedback from residents because people are engaged when normally they're not. So, you know, councillors or people that are running are taking notes. And then once the election is done, we have a sort of debrief for everyone that won. And we, you know, this is what we heard. This is what people want. Mm. And I just got to listen this year, kind of
sit on the sidelines and see what everybody else is hearing.
All right. So now, having been mayor for 4+ years, what is a week in a small town mayor's life look like? Like, you're obviously, you got to balance a job.
Yeah.
You obviously got town responsibilities. You got family responsibilities.
Yeah.
And like, I've talked, it seems like there's meetings and committees all over the place.
Yeah.
And now you're a delegate for Alberta for the Federation of, what is it? Federation of Canadian Municipalities.
Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of stuff on your plate.
So there are times, definitely. So for example, in 2 weeks, I have FCM board meetings on top of, we have a council meeting that week. And then I have two committee meetings. I have a meeting with, our MP that week. So if you look at, if you look at this week, I didn't have a whole lot. A few phone calls, spoke to our CAO a couple times throughout the week. And I usually go into the office a couple times throughout the week just to sign, sign checks, sign documents, get a little update. I didn't have any committee meetings this week. Monday we did have a council, our CAO review, which is we do once a year. So then if you fast forward 2 weeks, I will not be working my day job at all. I take the whole week off. I'm in, so FCM, I'm in about 2 to 3 meetings a day that are 2 to 3 hours each. plus I sit on Community Futures, which is a board out of Red Deer. I sit on, Central Alberta Economic Partnership. We have a council meeting. So that week will be crazy. And some weeks are like that. Some weeks are not. So I have a hard time, people have asked like, well, how many hours a week do you put in? Some weeks you put in 100. Some weeks you put in 20. It sort of depends, which is where you need that flexibility when you're going to be the mayor or even a councillor, but especially the mayor, because you have to be able to take, 3 or 4 days off at a time. I have a conference in Edmonton in March that, again, I need 3 days off to go up there, and you just have to have that flexibility to do those things. So it varies, but it can be a lot.
Yeah. Anything on? I don't just hog the whole thing.
No, I'm just thinking how difficult that would be then for somebody who just has a job. As a business owner, you have the flexibility to adjust your schedule. But yeah, anybody working a full-time job almost sounds like you wouldn't even be able to do this.
Yeah, it's tough. A lot of meetings, especially the local meetings, are evenings. So that helps people when you do have a full-time job. But FCM is daytime. Most of the regional committees that we sit on are daytime. So there is a, you need flexibility. And we have teachers on our council too, that, every time they need to go to one of these things, they've got to line up their own sub. They've got to take time off their work. So when you're in a position like that, they're losing money to be doing this, right? We do get paid as counselors, but they make more in their day jobs and then they lose that money. So it's definitely a commitment. And it's a passion that you have to be really interested in to do all the things that you can do. If you wanted to get into this job and just do the bare minimum, it'd be pretty easy to do that. You get elected every 4 years and you go to your council meetings. There's no requirement to do the other work, but if you want to be good at your job, you should be doing the other work too.
Yeah. So now when it comes to be mayor and, You certainly seem to present kind of a very even keel approach to a lot of things. You seem to be, your leadership seems to be kind to of a balancer, you try to take that middle approach to things. You hear from either side. You don't try to get to extremes one way or the other. You have a very almost laid back might be the way to say it. I don't know.
No, it's funny. You should have met me when I first became a counselor. We did the personality test thing and I was the bull, right? I was the guy that I honestly came in as a counselor and thought everyone else is an idiot and I know what's going on. And you learn pretty quickly that that's not true. So over the years, when I was doing this as a counselor and then especially becoming the mayor, I really learned to sort of look inwards a lot. And I looked at how I make decisions and then you look at how someone else makes decisions and realize, okay, they have a totally different process than I do. They look at things way different than I do. And I try to put myself in their shoes sometimes. And so that sort of balanced me out. And now being the mayor, I really, I try to let everyone speak. I wait my turn. It's important for me not to be seen pushing one side or the other. in my opinion. As a mayor, you don't need to be like that. And there are times where something I feel strongly about, I'll make sure everyone knows. But to be a mayor of a good council and to make sure everyone is feeling like their voice is heard, you can't just be the bull in the china shop. You have to, everyone gets the same voice, and you have to really listen to all the perspectives and the opinions. So I try to do that. I'm sure I don't all the time, but that is the goal.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into some current events, get your thoughts on some of these. So obviously the big news here in Alberta has been the opening up or the removal of the restriction exemptions program. And that meant, of course, the multiplex now is no longer has the, Kenny doesn't want to get into that. It's a vaccine passport.
Yeah. Right? That's what it is.
And so how much has that been a struggle in as far as town? Like, I guess even overall through the whole pandemic, like what kind of this and the vaccine passport has just been one aspect of it, but you've seen other municipalities, perhaps like Innisfail, I know was looking at, I don't know if they actually implemented, but they are looking at getting vaccine passports for, or requirements for like staff.
Yeah.
I don't think Pendle ever did that.
No, that was, it was never, I think it was brought up and everyone said, no, we don't need to do that. And then that was the end of it. It never came to a council meeting and there was never a.
Yeah. So what has been the council's experience through these 2 years? Like what kind of feedback have they heard from town?
So our outlook or how we've kind of played this or how we've tried to is, this isn't our jurisdiction for one. Mm-hmm. We're not public health experts. So we listen to what our public health experts say. When they tell us that we have to lock down and to shut our facilities down, we did it. When they brought out the REP, we did it. Well, we did it. The whole rollout was confusing for one. So we did it the way we thought we were able to. It's really hard to put a blanket across Alberta and say, do this, right? I mean, the usage of our facility is a lot different than Rogers Place, right? It's not the same. So we did it, you know.
Begrudgingly?
I want to say, a little begrudgingly. And sort of, we didn't go above and beyond. What we were required to do is what we did.
Yeah.
And we said from the start, when we're no longer required to do this, we don't want to be in this business. You know, on a personal level, I have a hard time with telling people they can't go into public facilities when they're funded by taxpayers, right? Yeah. They are by their very essence, public facilities. We, as a community, we build things to bring people together. And then you've got to tell people, no, you can't come together anymore. So it was hard. It wasn't something we enjoyed doing. Like I say, I'm not a public health expert. I do think there was value in some of the restrictions and the lockdowns, especially at the start of this. The last few months has been tough. It's hard as a community and as a leader to justify some of the things when they don't make sense to you, right? And you're trying to follow these rules. I mean, I went to a Rebels game in January, and I got invited. A friend of mine had box seats, so we go up and sit in the box, and they have a black curtain in front of where the seating area is, and then where the kind of the kitchen area is in the back. And we open the black curtain. I didn't really understand why it was there, and then the lady came in after and said, "Oh no, yeah, the black curtain has to say closed. When you're on that side of the black curtain, you can't have food or drinks." How your mask has to be on. But if you're back here, they had a tray of food set out and I'm going off. So that black curtain is the line.
It's a magic shield.
It gets hard. Yeah. So how does that, and those are the rules we're dealing with at the end there. So how can you expect those rules to fly when they don't make sense to anybody, right? So it was hard at the last few months, especially. You know, I have a lot of friends and some of them are vaccinated and had no problem with it. Some of them aren't and did have a problem with it. And it sucks to be involved in that, right? I mean, you don't ever want to be in that position where you have to tell people they can't come into your facility. As far as the community went, I mean, Penhold's been really fortunate throughout this thing, to be honest. I had 3 emails from residents. Some were multiple emails, but 3 people emailed me throughout this, you know, saying they were upset with the things. And I totally understand why they were upset. But just speaking, you know, from talking to my counterparts in other communities around us, I mean, we were pretty lucky with how the community handled all this. Mm-hmm. I know people weren't happy. It's hard for a lot of people, but we sort of did what we had to do, and we were pretty fortunate that we haven't dealt with some of the issues or the problems that other communities have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know some councils that have been served with lawsuits, which you know, whatever that is, we haven't been served yet, I guess.
I think at least, you know, from the citizen's point of view, like looking on social media, there hasn't been a lot of, if there has been like angst on or frustration on Facebook, I haven't sensed it being directed towards the town or anything like that.
And I think that's because we really didn't, like I say, we didn't add our own rules in. We didn't try to figure anything out. This is what we were told to do. So this is what we did. As soon as we're told we don't have to do that, we won't be doing it anymore.
Yeah. And I think the public recognized that. Yeah. They could tell that it was the town doing what the province was forcing them to do.
And we had inspections. We had AHS come to our facilities and check us. We had anonymous complaints, I guess. And they brought them into the multiplex that made them check people wearing masks. We dealt with all that throughout it. And we just followed the rules the best way we could.
Thankfully now it's hopefully gone for good.
Getting there.
At least this one aspect of it. Go ahead.
I think we're at a point now. It's like I say, it's hard because a lot of them weren't making sense. And I mean, it's been a long 2 years, right?
Yeah.
It's 2 years of this. It's hard on people. the emotional and mental toll this has taken on people. And I think, we have people, especially right now, that are kind of all over the map on how they feel about this, or even, you know, whether COVID's real or whether it's not, or whether mandates work or whether they don't. And it's been equally exhausting for both those groups, right?
Yeah.
At some point, we have to talk about how we're going to bring ourselves back together.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of weeks ago, you had a post on Facebook regarding the convoy. I think primarily convoy and kind of your general view on leadership.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious to know if this convoy has it played out differently than you thought, and then also, do you think it's almost time to end this? And while you're thinking about that, because I'm thinking it's getting close to that point. Like there's a point there. I think for me, the point of the protest was to get the attention of the politicians and start getting talking about this, and really give the conservatives a backbone.
Yeah.
And it seems like at least conservatives have heard this. And I wonder if they aren't putting Trudeau in a spot where his pride says, well, I can't pull back restrictions even if I wanted to on a federal level, because then it looks like I'm ceding to this group.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Has the convoy played out differently than you thought after that post, or just your general position?
Yeah. I mean, yes and no, I guess. I think what we have right now are two very different things happening with the convoy and with the blockades. And for one, you have people, and these are the people I was talking about in my Facebook post, was the people that are tired, people that are upset, people that want, you know, we haven't, our government hasn't communicated with us clearly. And I mean, provincial and federal. And that's led to a lot of this frustration. So they got involved in this cause because it sounds great. This isn't a trucker convoy. I mean,
the igniter of the whole thing was
something to rally behind, there's very few truckers involved in it. It's people. So you have those people, and some of them are still in Ottawa, and some of them went home. Some of them go there on the weekend. And then you have another group that this was never really about truckers at all, or it wasn't really even about vaccine mandates. This was about their other grudges that they have. And you can see that, in some of the stuff that's happening online. And now, I mean, they were circling the airport in Ottawa today, and now they've closed borders off. I mean, this isn't about COVID anymore. This is about their issues with the deep state, and their paranoia is about what our government's doing. And that stuff needed to end a long time ago. And again, we've got you know, inaction from the province and the federal government. Again, the Prime Minister put out a statement tonight, actually, talking about how he's working with municipalities to address this problem. These aren't, our border is unsecured. This isn't a municipal problem. That is your problem, buddy. Deal with it. Like, open up the border. Yeah. And now we've got, you know, concerns from the Americans that are saying, like, get your stuff under control here.
There's actually one columnist mentioned, I didn't read the column, but the National Post mentioned that he actually threw out the idea of the Marines going in across Michigan, the border, clear the bridge.
So those protests, those are illegal. Like,
That's what I mean. I think it's been the further it goes, the harder it is to legitimize their complaints.
And like I said, the protest is valid, but when you push into illegal blockades, you're no longer protesting. You're breaking the law. Yeah, you're committing a felony. Yeah.
And now they're, you know, public opinion. They had public opinion, public support was building for them. I mean,
I think it was around the 30% range, really sympathetic.
And if you start to look, you know, this week or next week, as long as this goes on, they're losing that because now you're affecting people's daily lives. Now we do have supply chain shortages. Now we have automobile plants shutting down.
Yeah, I heard that today.
Now we have farmers that can't get their cattle across the border. I mean, now you're upsetting people and now you're going to start to lose that public support that you had. So I think there's two very different things happening. Some of it is totally valid, legitimate protest, and they have the right to do that. But when you cross that line and start breaking a law, at the end of the day, these are good people, and they're fighting for something they believe in. I don't think we should be throwing people in jail. But I mean, if your truck is parked in the middle of a road or blocking a border, I mean, I would hope there's some fines going out anyway. I mean, need to be enforced, right? If we're a country based on the rule of law, then we need to be doing something about it. We can't let this stand.
Well, and I'm sympathetic to the protesters and especially those that went in with good intentions, especially because anytime you have a protest like this, anytime you have something that builds up this kind of momentum, you're going to draw in the wrong people. Yeah. Every protest does that. You see that every time there's a major protest is you'll have some fringe group that'll rally into it because they see it as the momentum being beneficial for their cause.
Yeah, I think that it was these fringe groups got in front of this and started this, and they've taken advantage of the anger and emotion that other people have. So they've brought these people in thinking that they're involved in supporting truckers and getting rid of vaccine mandates and all this. And they are doing that, but there's another cause that the people that are organizing these and starting some of these movements that they're working towards. And it's not the same cause.
And I think regardless of who started it or who's taking it over, I think the support that it did rally, like we said, it was like somewhere in the range of 30% of people, at least sympathetic towards it. Yep. I think that's what made the point.
Yep.
Like to just whether they were giving money to the GoFundMe or whether they were just indicating support, I think that makes a statement to the government that this is a huge portion of the population that actually care about this cause.
And, there were remarks, especially at the start that, 90% of the population's vaccinated. Well, and that is, I mean, that we know that's true, but there's still people that are vaccinated that are upset. Right. And 10% of Canada is still 3.8 million people. That's a lot of people. They do matter and their frustrations do matter. We can't just dismiss it because, most other people don't feel the same way they are. I mean, that's a lot of people and there are people spread out throughout the country. I mean, this isn't an Alberta thing. I mean, we've got three provinces now where borders are blockaded. Mm-hmm. And we've got, people still in Ottawa from wherever they came from.
Yeah.
Some that I'm sure are from Alberta are still there. I think our leaders have failed us because they haven't communicated. And I don't think for a second that Trudeau should be out meeting with these groups necessarily, but I do think that the federal government needs to be communicating with us and telling us, even when it comes to the restrictions, people do need to see an end date on this stuff, right? Like 2 years ago, people were behind it. Okay, this is what we need to do. Let's bend the curve, all that stuff, right? And they used to be really good at communicating with us back then too. And then it's like, they got tired. So they quit communicating. Well, the rest of us are still here. I mean, we used to have weekly conference calls with the province, weekly conference calls with municipalities where they'd give us updates, tell us what's happening, tell us what the plan is. That hasn't happened for over a year. They gave up too, right? They got tired of it.
Yeah.
And people get frustrated. Yeah. And here we are.
Yeah. I was thinking, yeah, what, okay. So tie back to your Facebook post. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a good leader has empathy and compassion.
Yeah.
Now I find that, I don't know if you heard our critiques on that, but we had some issues with that as a leader, or as you know, a way of making decisions as a leader. Let's put it that way. Okay. But I'm curious. I just kind of maybe to kind of validate your point regarding that. Maybe not empathy, but perhaps sympathy, because what I think one of the breakdowns in leadership, particularly from the liberal side, is kind of the language towards the people of this convoy that certainly hasn't helped the cause. Yeah. And so maybe that's where you know we can find that where we can agree where does sympathy come in? Well, it comes with a leader who can at least recognize the arguments and the emotions and the position of the other person.
Yeah.
Even if they don't agree with their demands.
Exactly.
And so it seems like it's gone a long ways to kind of hurting. It ends up creating that kind of division that's in place.
I mean, our political system as it's designed right now is sort of designed to alienate people and to section people off into groups so you can raise money off them and get them angry. I mean,
yeah.
Angrier, or people that are more angry or more passionate about a certain topic are more likely to give money for it, right? And politicians know that, political parties know that. And I think that's what we've started to see is politicians using this for their own personal game, or political parties especially. And that's driven to some of this, right? We're not making decisions for the best, you know, for the good of the country. We're making political decisions for the good of our party, for the good of the next election, or for our friends' by-election, or whatever they're doing it for, right? And good government gets lost when we do that. But we've built this system to do it, right? In an ideal world, and our town council actually wrote a letter to both Premier Kenny and Rachel Notley about a year and a half ago now. Mm-hmm. And we said, you know, we're in a declared emergency. You are our leaders for all intents and purposes. You should be out together. Like I would have loved when we're announcing lockdowns or when we're announcing public health measures, I would have loved to see Rachel Notley and Jason Kenney take a podium together and say, look, we're listening to our public health experts. This is the advice we've been given, and we need to get behind this, and everyone needs to stick together. And we didn't get that. So now you have, you know, whatever in a provincial perspective, I guess, whatever the UCP does, the NDP is going to be against. Whatever the NDP says, the UCP is going to be against. It's all right for people to have good ideas and it's all right to support somebody sometimes.
Yeah.
But you don't make money when you do that. So.
No. Okay. So yeah, you might have a little more inside track on that, but like how realistic is that as a possibility? Cause I think it was the last podcast we talked about. It's not the fact that there's people with differing views on things that I think create division. It's when those become so calcified to the point where we can't talk with one another over across those divisions. So like when you say, see Kenny and Notley out making these announcements, I'm like, yeah, that's a wonderful fantasy story. Like,
yeah. Right.
Let's,
it is.
Let's write that. Like, yeah, Tolkien would be proud of that. Like that just seems so crazy. Like it doesn't seem possible. So
I think it can be. I think it can be, right?
Okay. What needs to happen for something like that?
We need to elect better people, honestly. We elect politicians. We don't elect leaders. We don't elect people that are truly interested in good government. Mm-hmm. We elect parties, right? I mean, how many MLAs or MPs get elected simply because of the color of their sign, right? Are they any good? No. We have a ton of bad politicians in this country, like most countries do, right? But they're elected, you know, with 70-some% of the vote every 4 years because, hey, they got a blue sign and we vote blue here, or they got a red sign if you're not in Alberta, I guess, but in other places, right? Yeah. And that's just the reality. We're not looking at the candidate. We're not looking at the local candidates that are actually going to be doing the work, that are actually going to be representing you and listening to your voice. and we get lost, right? Mm-hmm. We don't get the commitment from MPs or MLAs because of that, because, you know, in a lot of ways we're giving them guaranteed job security with zero accountability for how they do their job. We've got to move away from that. So the only way that can happen is by, you know, good people getting involved and just stressing that. I think we've got to convince people to buy in. We've got to have leaders that, and I mean, from a political point of view, this is dumb, but we've got to have leaders that are willing to put, you know, the country or the province ahead of themselves. And there are those people out there. Yeah, I've met a ton of them.
So rare.
They are so rare.
But to make it work, like to some extent, that's kind of what they were trying to do with when they formed the UCP, was this grassroots movement and to form a good government.
Yeah.
And now it's just turned into exactly what it's always been.
Yep.
It went from this grassroots movement of being good government, what government is meant to be. And now you can't tell the difference between it and what the conservative parties of the past were.
No, it's the exact same.
Not that you have the magic wand to make it happen, but how do we do this?
Yeah. Like when I watched the little clips from Question Period that, you know, my right wing Facebook groups post out, or I'm sure the other side does the same thing. It's all a show. You don't hear the person, you hear the actor, you hear the politician.
Question Period has become a farce. There's no purpose for it. Nothing gets accomplished in it because the questions are pre-written, the answers are pre-written, to get that soundbite.
Every response has the same keywords in it that you hear in every other response that they know everybody needs to hear or wants to hear.
They're all just planning their next fundraising email. I swear. Honestly, did you see what I said to the prime minister? Click this link. And there's your one speech that you get once a week from the House of Commons. And
So I'm glad you are justifying my cynicism.
I am an eternal optimist, so I believe it can be done.
Yeah.
But we need to pay attention to who we're putting in office. And we need to look past, you know, the color of their sign and just focus on the person, truly. We're not, you know, nobody in Penhold, Alberta elected Justin Trudeau. Nobody in Penhold, Alberta elected Jason Kenney.
Yeah.
We elected our local people. Those are the people that need to matter to us. We've got to put the rest of it aside and focus on those local people.
Mm-hmm. That's where it has to start. You're not going to change the system from the top down. It's got to be that kind of worry about your home, your local area first, and who you can directly affect.
Well, and we so often strategic voting. We strategically vote for what we look at as the lesser of the two evil options. And so we're not picking the guy we really dislike. Instead, we're picking the one we dislike a little less in hopes that that party will do better.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you're not voting for anybody. You're really voting against somebody else. And like you say, we're not voting for the good people.
Yeah. Yeah. We're voting for the color of the sign. There's some good, sometimes you get lucky and you get a good one there, but in a lot of cases we're not getting the type of government that we should be getting or that we're supposed to be getting.
Yeah.
As we kind of start wrapping up, you mentioned that you are an eternal optimist. I think is that what you just said?
Yeah, I try to be.
So what gives you that hope, that optimism? Because when you tell me about all the meetings that you're in and all the committees that you're part of, all I get stuck thinking about is the grind of the political process, how everything changes so slowly, and then you just throw on top of that the whole power struggle at the top. Especially as someone in politics, how do you
It's a grind, honestly. I've always had that outlook on life. I get, you know, my wife has the same outlook. We just always try to keep each other positive. And I've met so many good people getting involved in this. So many people that I know think like me, and I know are capable of being the person I say that we need. So they are out there. When you take that, so I know a lot of municipal politicians, obviously, because that's where I'm in. But when you take that leap, it's easy to get into the game and fall in line and do what everyone else does, right? So the challenge is, okay, we've got good people out there. We've got to get them in the game, and we've got to get them to stick to what they said they wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's an easy way to do it. I know there are those people out there. I know when I see them, I make sure I point them out, and I try to push people I know to that cause.
I guess you have to, because I guess the political or the political office just attracts a certain personality already, I think.
Yeah. You know? And you know,
the more humbler approach, the guy who perhaps would be less likely to grab the power, as it were, they're just not going to be drawn to that, perhaps out of the cynicism, but just that's another personality.
It's a little more. It's an ego thing too, right? Once you get into that position, sure. I mean, it's gotta be, right? Like, don't get me wrong, it's really awesome to be the mayor of Penhold. Like, you know, and then, you know, when you're the mayor of a small town, any town really, people think you have power that you don't have. But it's, you know, it feels really good to walk into a room and be called your worship and be the mayor, right? So growing up in politics and, you know, so when I was, I think 10 years old, I was door knocking with Gary Sievertson, a former MLA from a,
yeah.
So my mom always told me as I got involved, she said, you know, every politician has a shelf life and it's different for everyone. Some it's 4 years, some it's 6 years, some it's 20 years. But there comes a point when you do this type of work where you're no longer doing it for the community, you're doing it for yourself, for your ego and for that bump. Right. And that's when people need to know it's time to get out. So we have a lot of people that they don't want to get out because the ego, it's really cool to do what they're doing and they want to keep doing that. So as I'm involved in this and down that path, that's always in the back of my mind is, okay, like, am I still doing this for the right reasons? And I still am. And I hope that when I get to the point that I'm not, I'll be able to tell myself that it's time to get out. That's my goal. But I think that's what we should expect from all our politicians and leaders. I mean, how many politicians, and I'm never going to be foolish enough to say something like this, like, but there are politicians, throughout, well, I think, you know, in Alberta and Canada for sure, that 20 years ago said, nobody, politics shouldn't be a lifetime job. And here they are 20 some years later, and this is their lifetime job, right? Yeah. And maybe they're still good at their job. Maybe they're not, but they
become what they once despised.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So thanks for joining us. I do want to close with one last story.
Okay.
Just to, usually we close with some sort of light story.
Yeah.
Now you're kind of a political junkie.
Yeah.
We consider. Did you know that the Canadian Constitution was changed this week?
I did not. No.
Yeah, it was changed.
Okay.
So let me bring up my article here. Where is it?
I like how you said
there
something
is, yeah.
light.
And yeah.
then you just go into the Constitution being changed.
Yeah, I guess. There's a little bit of a switch there, but it's light and it's in the way it was put in, or kind of the game that was played during to change the Constitution. So in 1905, the Saskatchewan Act is put in place. Right. And so that was the act that kind of formalized Saskatchewan as a new province. Now, part of that act was a provision regarding Canadian Pacific Railway. And it allowed them, I guess, some sort of ability to get out of taxes.
Specifically in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, specifically, I guess.
Don't want to get me started on the railway.
we're not talking about whistles, so don't worry about that. But so what ends up happening is that the article here says that some enterprising lawyer at the railroad found an obscure clause in the Canadian Constitution that seemed to exempt the company from taxation. So the CPR, the Canadian Pacific Railway, then presented the government with an invoice for $340 million in tax refunds and a court date if they didn't want to pay it. All right. So yeah, so like I said, it's good. It's a good story.
That's not surprising at all coming from CP. Like,
but sure. Like if there's a possibility that you can get $340 million, I can't fault them for that.
Yeah.
I can't, but
you gotta shoot your shot.
That's right. That's right. But here, so yeah, so we've talked about kind of the division that's in place so much. We found some that people can get behind. in response, the Saskatchewan government and the federal government teamed up to do the impossible. It's a fast-tracked amendment to the Constitution to remove the no-tax measure and otherwise tell the railroads to shove it. It passed the House of Commons on Wednesday.
Wow.
So there's still some things that the government can still. Yeah, I was going to say
they can function sometimes.
Yeah, especially when you threaten their tax base. Yeah. So yeah. I think we found that the common thread here. You know, if you try to take away their tax money, that might be the way to go. I came across that story and it's just so bizarre that there's a constitution or like amendment to the Constitution.
Yeah,
and it just kind of floats by.
Yeah,
it's just.
It's a minor one, but it's still the Constitution.
Like, yeah, it's a major thing to change.
Yeah.
Like what other changes are going on?
How often do they amend it?
I thought I'd throw that in. I thought you'd appreciate that little nugget there. So pay attention. The Constitution is changing, but not necessarily perhaps the way you thought it would. or maybe I should say things are being passed in Parliament, just not the things you're thinking they're passing. But anyways, there's my light finish for the show is changes to the Canadian Constitution. All right. So thank you. I appreciate you giving up your time.
Yeah, this was great. Anytime.
Anytime. Not one of those 100 hour weeks.
Though. Yeah.
We'll try to spare that. And let you hang out with the family during that. But yeah, we appreciate the time that you've offered to us now and your perspective. Hopefully this hasn't scared away anyone else.
I think we're
pretty good.
My report to council in our group chat later will say this was good. Don't worry.
There's one thing. We didn't want to scare people off. We'll save the hard hitting ones for like the second time around.
Yeah.
Or like we'll do like a big year end interview and grill you for all the grievances like on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just read Penhold happenings.
Yeah. So I've been pretty much off Facebook.
Good move.
I check it once every 2 or 3 days to see if anyone's tagged me in anything. Yeah, I've been pretty much off of it for 2 weeks now, just because it was hard to see things on there.
All right. Well, thank you again. I hope you guys have enjoyed the show. If there is any comments, of course, leave them in the chat. We'll put the sources as well on our website, penholdtalkradio.ca. Any place where people can hit you up? Like this feels very professional, isn't it?
So,
like, do you have any books you're trying to sell?
No books.
No IPAs.
I have been into home brewing in the last since COVID. Although I don't have anything on the go right now. It's been a little too cold.
The other thing I was
just brewing my garage. But
yeah, I was going to ask about your French because obviously you have national ambitions. So there's an opening now in Conservative Party, I hear.
Yeah.
I'm
lining up my financial backers. My French is coming along. I can read French decently.
Yeah.
The issue I have is I don't speak it enough. So I really have to think of the words to say. And then when I'm listening to someone say something in French, I'm still processing that first sentence by the time they're onto the second one. And then I'm like, then I missed the second sentence entirely. But I switched my Google to French. My Google Assistant. I do have someone I can speak French with now. Nice. So,
Cool. No, we appreciate the time. Lovely to chat with you.
Oh, I am going to tell people.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm obviously not on Facebook that much right now. I still do have it. So if anyone ever wants to reach out to me, I'm on there as Mike Yarjo or Mike Yarjo Penhold Mayor. I'm on Twitter as M Yarjo, Instagram, Mike from Penhold. My cell phone is on my Facebook all the time. Email address is myarjo@townofpenhold.ca. So I try to make myself as accessible as possible, and I unless they go to junk mail, I respond very promptly to every email I get.
And there's the inside joke for the episode. Excellent. All right. So I am Brian Constein.
And I'm Michael Rowland.
And this has been Penhold Talk Radio.